Sometime late Monday night, somebody pushed 404 malicious package versions across 170 NPM packages and two PyPI packages in a 5-hour window. They hit every router in the TanStack scope: React, Vue, Solid, the DevTools, and the SSR plugins. They hit all three Mistral AI SDKs, the NPM ones, and the PyPI one. They hit the entire UiPath scope, 65 packages in a single burst. They hit OpenSearch's official NPM client, which gets 1.3 million weekly downloads. And they hit Guardrails AI on PyPI, which is an irony I'll leave alone. Step Security and Socket are tracking this as mini shy Hulud. SafeDep published the deepest write-up so far, and that's the one I'd point you at. It's linked in the show notes. The headline number is bad enough. The mechanism is what I want to spend a minute on. Two different trigger styles. The Mistral packages stripped out the legitimate build scripts and replaced them with a single pre-install hook that ran a setup script through Bun. The hook downloads a Bun runtime binary straight from the official OpenShift GitHub releases, then runs the payload through Bun. Smart, in a grim way. Bun is on developers' allow lists, GitHub releases are on developers' allow lists, and the binary signature is the real Bun binary. The TanStack packages were stealthier. The package.json scripts block was left alone. Instead, the attackers added one entry to the optional dash dependencies list, pointing at a TanStack setup package. At a real specific commit in the real TanStack router GitHub repository. That commit, which GitHub has since deleted, contained a package.json with a prepare script that ran the same payload via Bun and then forced an error exit so the loader output wouldn't show up in the install log, which means the attackers had write access to the TanStack GitHub repository on top of the NPM publish tokens. That's two compromises, not one, in the same campaign. The payload itself is a 2 MB obfuscated JavaScript file. It carries a credential-stealing framework with dedicated providers for AWS IMN. It hits the metadata endpoint at 169.254 and for HashiCorp Vault on local-host port 820. It also scoops up GitHub personal access tokens, OAuth and server tokens, NPM publish tokens, and GitHub Actions OIDC tokens. Standard cloud credential bingo card. The exfiltration is the interesting part. There's no fixed command and control domain to seize. The payload embeds a full session messenger client. Session is the onion-routed encrypted messenger built on the Oxen network and routes stolen credentials through Session's swarm of service nodes. The only static piece of infrastructure is the seed node bootstrap, with TLS certs pinned in the binary. You can't take this down by yanking a domain. And then there's the propagation step, which should keep you up tonight. The payload reads the GitHub repository environment variable, enumerates the branches of the victim's repo through the GitHub GraphQL API, filters out anything that looks like main or master or release, and then uses a GraphQL mutation to push files into feature branches. It pushes a settings file, a setup script, and a router runtime file into the .claude directory, plus a tasks file into the .vscode directory. It also pushes a complete copy of the obfuscated payload into .claude, using a Bun runtime trick to read its own running binary off disk, which means the next developer who clones that branch, opens it in VS Code, or runs Claude code against it, executes the payload locally with no further user action. Cloning is enough. Opening is enough. The attackers didn't just compromise packages. They turned the developer's own editor into a reinfection surface. We've spent a year telling each other that the agent in the editor pattern moves the trust boundary. This campaign is the first I've seen that picks up that boundary and walks through it on purpose. One more wrinkle. The Mistral pre-install hook references the payload under one file name, but the actual file in the Mistral tarball was renamed. so the Mistral hook crashes at runtime. The attackers didn't even bother to rename the constant before publishing to a different vendor's scope. That tells you a lot about the operational sloppiness, and a little about the speed. This was a single template, fired at every scope they had a token for, in under 5 hours. If you've pulled anything from those scopes since Monday evening Pacific time, do 3 things. Rotate your AWS, NPM, and GitHub tokens. Audit the .cloud and .vscode directories in every repo you touched, and check your feature branches for commits with co-authored by trailers you don't recognize. PyPI has quarantined the Mistral and Guardrails packages entirely. NPM has been rolling cleanups all morning. Mira Murati's Thinking Machines lab dropped its first research preview yesterday, and it isn't a chat model. They're calling it an interaction model. The release is TML Interaction Small, and the thesis is sharp enough that I want to read you the one sentence that anchors it. They write, "Humans increasingly get pushed out not because the work doesn't need them, but because the interface has no room for them." That's a direct shot at the autonomous agent doctrine the big labs have been pushing. The post quotes, without naming, a recent frontier model card that admits, when used in an interactive, synchronous, hands-on keyboard pattern, the benefits of the model were less clear, and then says autonomous long-running harnesses better elicited the model's coding capabilities. Thinking Machines reads that line as a confession, not a feature. Their argument is that the model is harder to use synchronously because the architecture treats turn-taking as someone else's problem, bolted on with a voice activity detection harness and a turn boundary predictor. The architecture is the interesting part. Instead of the model consuming a full user turn and producing a full response, they split everything into 200 millisecond micro turns. 200 milliseconds of input, 200 of output, interleaved. Audio, video, and text are all streams. There's no encoder model in front. Audio comes in as discrete MEL features through a light embedding layer. Video frames are split into 40 by 40 patches through a hierarchical MLP, and all of that gets co-trained from scratch with the transformer. The second piece is what they call the background model. The interaction model handles the live thread, listening, watching, talking, and taking new input. When a task needs deeper reasoning or longer tool use, the interaction model delegates to the background model, which runs asynchronously and streams results back in. The interaction model is still present the whole time. You can interrupt it, change your mind, or ask a follow-up, and the heavy work keeps running in the background and folds in when it's ready. That's a different shape than the fire and forget the autonomous agent loop most of us have been building. The benchmarks they ran make the picture honest. On audio multi-challenge, TML Interaction Small scores 43.4, which beats GPT Real-Time 2.0 on minimal and Gemini 3.1 Flash Live on minimal, and loses to GPT Real-Time 2.0 on extra high, which is the thinking setting. On FD Bench V1.5, it scores 77.8 against everyone else in the 40s. Turn-taking latency comes in at 0.4 seconds. The honest read, it dominates instant interactivity, and it's competitive but not state-of-the-art on the deep thinking benchmarks, unless they let the background model wake up. What got my attention is 2 new benchmarks they introduce, called TimeSpeak and QSpeak. TimeSpeak asks the model to initiate speech at a specified time with the correct content. Remind me to breathe in and out every 4 seconds until I ask you to stop. QSpeak asks the model to speak at the appropriate moment in response to something the user is doing. Every time I code switch into another language, give me the correct word in the original language. Those are things a turn-based model with a voice activity detection harness simply can't do, because they require the model to decide to speak while you're still speaking. If you build coding agents for a living, this is worth thinking about, because the same idea generalizes. Interrupt me when I'm writing a bug is the Q-speak shape applied to your editor. Tell me when this test has been running for 30 seconds without progress is the time-speak shape applied to your terminal. We've been treating the model as a turn-taker because the model was built as a turn-taker. Thinking Machines is asking what you get if the unit of interaction is 200 milliseconds and the model is allowed to interject. I don't yet know if any of this matters for how you ship code tomorrow morning. The model is a research preview, not an API. But the framing is the most interesting framing of the autonomy debate I've read this year. The big lab pitch is give the model a task, walk away, come back. The Thinking Machines pitch is stay at the keyboard and let the model stay in the room with you. Those are different bets on what work feels like when the model is actually good. Alexei Kladov. Matt Klad posted a short letter today on learning software architecture, originally written in reply to a researcher physicist who emailed him asking how to get better at design. It's 1,000 words. It hit the front page of Hacker News with about 200 points by mid-morning, and I want to walk through what's in it, because Matt Klad is the person who wrote Rust Analyzer, and he picks his examples carefully. The opening claim is the one a lot of people will quote, and it deserves to be quoted. He cites a line from New Gierig: "We talk about programming like it is about writing code. But the code ends up being less important than the architecture, and the architecture ends up being less important than social issues. Conway's Law as the actual curriculum, not the cute corollary." The example he walks through is the build system of Rust Analyzer. He writes, and I'm going to read this almost in full because it's the cleanest articulation I've seen of architecture as recruiting strategy. "My insistence that Rust Analyzer doesn't require building Rust-C, that it builds on stable, that it doesn't have any C dependencies, and that the entire test suite takes seconds, was in the service of the goal of attracting high-impact contributors. I was wrangling the build system to make sure people can work on the borrow checker without thinking about anything else." Read that twice. The build system isn't a build system. It's a filter on who shows up. If your project takes 40 minutes to compile and requires a custom tool chain, you've decided, whether you meant to or not, that nobody with a weekend will help you. Then the second half. To handle the breadth features, the dozens of small IDE behaviors no single deep contributor wants to own, MacClad split the internals into independent features, each wrapped in a catch and unwind at runtime. The bar for a feature pull request was happy path works and tested. If the code crashes, fine. The crash is isolated to that feature, and the runtime promise is that features work against an immutable snapshot and can't poison shared data. That's the architecture call. Pay for a stronger invariant in the core, so the bar for contributions in the periphery can be lower. What I like about this is how plain it is. There's no diagram, there's no layered onion. The architectural decision is wrap every feature in catch and unwind and forbid mutation of the snapshot. And the consequence is, we can accept code from people who don't have time to be careful, and we still ship something stable. He also has a paragraph on incentives that I think every senior engineer should read once a year. He says you basically have two moves. One, occasionally, rarely, you get to nudge the incentive structure of a project, and that's where the leverage is. Two, if you can't change it, speed run the four stages of grief to acceptance and do the best work you can inside it. He cites Tiger Style, the set of rules that came out of Tiger Beetle's culture, and says the secret sauce there isn't the rules themselves, it's the social context that makes those rules a good idea. Same rules in a different shop would be cargo culting. The reading list is also worth the click. He points at Gary Bernhardt's boundaries talk. P Peter Hinchins and the Zero MQ Guide for Conway's Training Turked, Jammy's Reflections on a Decade of Coding, and Ted Kaminsky's blog. He doesn't recommend a single book because, he says, the truths aren't in a book, they're in the practice, which is a slightly inconvenient answer, but I think a true one. The one thing I'd add for our context, we're now writing code with agents that don't yet experience Conway's law. The agent will happily produce a 15,000-line refactor that no team would have shipped, because no team would have agreed to it. Architecture as social filter still matters, maybe more than ever, except now the filter has to include, will a sleepy human review this in the morning, not just, will a weekend contributor write this? I'd love to read Matt Clad's follow-up on that, if he writes one. Short one. Rukshan, a developer in Sri Lanka, writing on his personal blog, has a small post titled, Don't Hijack My Mouse Pointer. It's 269 words. It's worth them. His observation is that more and more sites are replacing the OS mouse pointer with custom bespoke designs. Glowing blobs, magnetic trails, oversized circles that lag the cursor by a few frames. The pointer, he points out, is shaped the way it is for accumulated reasons. The tilt makes it easy to draw on low-resolution screens. The sharp tip makes click targets accurate. None of this was arbitrary. And he names the cause, which is what makes it a braid item. He writes, before vibe coding, it was difficult and time-consuming to implement such fancy effects. But now it takes a single prompt and a few hundred tokens, and you have a fancy effect instead of the nice pointer. I'm quoting this because it's one of the cleanest small examples of a thing I think we're going to see a lot more of over the next year. When the implementation cost of a junky pattern drops to zero, the only thing standing between the pattern and the user is taste. We've spent decades building friction around bad ideas. They were hard to build, so people had to want them. That friction is gone. The cursor on your portfolio site is now a single prompt away from being a 10-pixel pink blob that misses every link. I don't think the answer is to ask agents to refuse. We're about to find out, very quickly, who has taste and who was just constrained. The constraint was doing more work than we knew. Two posts on the local LAMA subreddit today, and they sit nicely next to each other. The first one is from a builder calling themselves AP Frisco, and the title is, I'm not kidding, Computer Build Using Intel Optane Persistent Memory Can Run 1 Trillion Parameter Model at Over 4 Tokens Per Second. 633 upvotes, 107 comments. The setup? AP Frisco picked up discontinued Intel Optane Persistent Memory DIMMs. Optane PMEM sits in a DIMM slot but operates somewhere between DRAM and an SSD. Slower than DRAM, much faster than NVMe, and dense enough that you can fit hundreds of gigabytes into a single workstation. Intel killed the line a few years back, so now there's a small ecosystem of people buying it on the secondary market specifically to run huge mixture of experts models that nobody can afford the DRAM for. With that, AP Frisco is running Kimi K2.5, Moonshot AI's 1 trillion parameter open weights model at roughly 4 tokens per second. 4 tokens per second is unusable for chat. It's fine for an overnight batch job. The point isn't, is this fast enough? It's, is this possible at all? Last year, a trillion parameter model on a home workstation wasn't a sentence anybody could finish. Today, it runs on a 5-figure pile of discontinued enterprise memory and a single GPU. The second post is from altruistic-heat9531, and it's about multi-token prediction. Unsloth has published Qwen3.627b and Qwen3.635b-A3b as GGUF files, but with the multi-token prediction head from the original training run preserved. Multi-token prediction, if you haven't been tracking it, is the idea that you train the model to predict the next two or three tokens at once, instead of one. At inference, the extra heads function as a speculative draft for the main head, which is exactly the trick speculative decoding plays with a smaller draft model. Except now you don't need a smaller draft model because it's part of the same checkpoint. The wrinkle: you have to check out the in-flight llama.cpp pull request that adds MTP support. Build it yourself, and then point it at these GGUFs. The community read in the comments is that the speed-up, when you get it working, is real and ranges from the high single-digit percent into the low 30s, depending on the workload and the quantization. What I like about the two posts side by side is that they capture the texture of where local LAM work actually lives right now. It isn't buy the latest H200. It's find Intel Optane DIMMs on eBay and check out the not yet merged MTP branch. The local frontier is being pushed forward by people scavenging the corners of the hardware market and pulling unmerged commits to chase 10%. That's craft. So that's the day. A coordinated supply chain campaign that explicitly weaponizes Claude Code and VS Code config files as the propagation step, which I think is the moment the agent in the editor pattern stopped being a clean win on its own. A new model from a new lab arguing that the next frontier isn't autonomy, but bandwidth between the human and the model. A short letter from MacLad reminding us that the build system is an org chart in disguise. A small post about cursors that I think will look prescient in a year. And two home rigs pushing the local frontier with eBay parts and unmerged pull requests. If you pulled from NPM or PyPy yesterday, rotate your tokens before you do anything else, and grep your repos for .claude and .vs code files you didn't write. If you haven't read the MacLad piece, read it tonight. And if you build editor resident agents, read the safe dep write-up twice, because tomorrow's threat model is going to look more like that and less like the prompt injection toy examples we've been handing each other for 2 years. That's what I'll be watching next. Lenar.